Hello, everybody. I'm Vinny Eastwood, Mr. News, and I'm late.
That's okay. Vinny has buku videos and shows that he's done on several networks, right?
Vinny? I would say so, yeah. I think I've been interviewed like several hundred times.
This is
Aurora,
and I'm on...
Oh. All right, turn the player off. I messed up, too. I couldn't hear anything, and I was wondering where the music was, and I was on the air. So, we're going to...
Okay, I got it. I got it off. Yeah. See, I record live streams while I'm on radio, so that as soon as the show's over, you've got an archive that you can post right away.
That's cool. I don't really know how to do that unless I use... What is that program? Audio something box? I don't know. I'm not sure what it is.
Well, see, I'm on a Mac. I use Audio Hijack Pro, and what that one can do, what it does is it hijacks specific programs. So if you've got, like, say, Firefox open or something, and you're playing the Revolution Radio live stream, you can click Hijack and record, and it records the stream, not anything else. So you can talk on Skype while it's recording Firefox, and then you just mute the regular sound and turn the Skype into the USB microphone and headphones. So
give me
separate channels.
What is the name of it again?
Audio Hijack Pro. It's good stuff.
Write that one down.
And if in order to record, and also a little bit of advice out there for other radio show hosts, if you're recording, it helps to record something twice. So simultaneously, if you're recording your own Skype call, I use a program called Call Recorder for Mac. That's $20, and it's amazing. Like, you can actually record different audio channels. So if you're talking and I talk over the top of you or something like that, I can actually split the channels out and be able to kind of like move it a little so that you can hear both of us, and then just delay it a little. It's wonderful stuff.
Then you can edit it, right, for you to stream it.
Exactly.
That's awesome. I have not tried that yet. Well, I have a different computer. My other computer wouldn't handle any of that kind of stuff, so I'm going to put MP3s on the blog that I have, because the YouTube is non-existent. But if you want access to the archives, you can just $5 and you have access to everything that's ever been on the station, which is a really good deal, I think.
It's an enormous catalog, that's for sure.
Yeah. And if people want to go and find something that their friend did a year ago, you got it right there. What, you're on a Mac?
Yeah. I've had this one for about probably about 4 years. It has never crashed once, has never had a virus once, has never had a program fail once, and I've produced more content than most people would dream in 20 years.
That's amazing. I've never used a Mac, but there are some things that you can't do, like Flash or something people have a problem with, like the chat room.
Well, I think Flash is only a problem for those on an iPad or an iPhone, because Apple had this big stoush with Flash, and it's basically like a professional thing. They go around saying, oh, Flash is a little bit dodgy or something wrong or whatever, but I can get Flash on my desktop Mac here, so it's just basically a stupid thing.
Right, I understand that. Okay, you're on the station Wednesday nights, right?
Oh, yeah, now I am, from 10 p.m. till midnight every Wednesday night. And this week, I should probably say, we had Santos Bonacci. This is his first live interview since being wanted by the Australian Federal Police. And, yeah, man, people are in pain everywhere, man. Really, really, it's quite tough times. A lot of infighting and various movements, and I don't know why, but I wind up always being in the middle of it. Basically, because I'm just, I don't know, maybe very empathetic. I really care about people and don't like them. What was it I said the other day? It takes a lifetime to build a reputation for yourself, but it only takes a day to destroy it. And sometimes it's not you that destroys it. And a lot of the time I see people under attack by others, and I just try to, you know, lend in and lend my support and whatever minimalistic way that I can. But in general, I just try to make them laugh and feel better, and I think it helps.
Yeah, it does help. I've had some tough spots myself, and I don't. When people, obviously in the Christian world, it's like, it's because you didn't pay your tithes, it's why you're having hard times, or you don't have enough faith and all that. You know, that's a bunch of crap to me. It does not help when people try to throw more burdens on you. So I understand. Santos, I think there's too big of a stink about him. 500 toll fines that he's got tickets for. I'm like, who gets 500 toll fines? How do you get through without paying a toll 500 times? It's ridiculous stuff they're saying out there.
Well, in New Zealand, the way the tolls work is we have an automatic camera. So you roll through the toll and it takes a flash of your license plate. So you could conceivably, if you don't go to the website or go to the pay stations, you can voluntarily do so, then you can probably rack up quite a few of them. And the way I hear it, Australia has toll roads up to Wazoo. So, you know, you could probably get 500 toll fines just by walking down the street.
I haven't ridden on a toll road since Richmond, Virginia, about 14 years ago. So, you know what I mean? Toll roads don't exist out in the West. Are they because the economy is down?
No. Toll roads are just one thing and one thing only. Ownership of public property by private corporations via long-term contract. All right. So you'll come in, you'll go, okay, who built all these roads here, bro? Oh, the taxpayers did with their hard-earned money that they sweated off their brow. Oh, yeah? Well, what if we charge them for using the roads that they've already paid for? You know, that's not a bad idea, bro. How are we going to go about that? What we'll do...
How's the taxpayer being fined again for riding on the road that they paid for?
Well, it's really simple, okay? What you do is you charge them and tell them that they don't have a choice, right? And then you send them letters and stuff that are BS to tell them that if you don't pay these fines for travelling on a road that you already paid for, then you're a criminal. And we're going to make you wanted by the police, and we're going to seize your property, and so on and so forth. So basically, they seize your property, charge you for using your own property, and then if you don't pay for using your own property, they steal your property that you paid for.
That is the most ridiculous thing, like, ever.
No, well, the thing is, this is the way the world works, you know. Get with the program. it's just scumbaggery in all of its wonderful splendor.
You need to get a trademark on that word, scumbaggery.
I didn't make it up. It's actually in the Urban Dictionary, apparently. Somebody made it up long before me. I've just kind of started to popularize it because I think it's freaking hilarious.
It is. It's brilliant. Oh boy! So Santos, he did. I listened to that show. It was a really good show, and I don't know. He still sounds like he's going strong. He's not letting them get him down.
Well, he's calmed down significantly because I did a 25-minute little splurge with him, and that archives up on my website now. Before that interview that you listened to, and he was very, very upset. He was cussing out the police and that kind of thing. So, in my opinion, a whole lot of people really criticized Santos because he acted really aggressively on Facebook and all of these sorts of things. But he apologized for that in a broadcast. And in my opinion, once somebody apologizes, like unreservedly apologizes, specifically publicly, that's when you can pretty much guarantee that they're not a sociopath or a psychopath or anything like that, that they're just a decent person who goes through hard times, just like all of us do. And I hope that people who criticize him someday know what it feels like to, you know, have your possessions taken, to be under threat of arrest, to have hordes of trolls coming out demonizing you, calling you a pedophile and all of that kind of stuff, and see how you react. Because personally, I don't think I would have really acted too much differently. I mean, I've been advising Santos, instead of like replying to people who are just douchebags, who are just mean and cruel, etc., that are really, like, you know, getting your heart boiling and kind of insulting you in ways that kind of are affront to your entire way of life, sort of thing, don't argue with them, bro. Just block. Okay? If I mean, the chicken is a great example of what of the behavior you should do on Facebook with trolls. Block, 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 block. Block, 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 block. Block, 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 block. That's right. And I think when we're talking about social media, it's kind of like a place where people get off on the wrong foot a lot of the time, you know? Because much of our communication is interpreted through tone of voice, body language, things of that, and very little of that is kind of transmutable through emoticons. So people get into fights for no reason at all, and I think sometimes you just have to go, look, I'm sorry, we got off on the wrong foot here, and if the other person goes, oh, okay, all right, you know, that's cool, but sometimes... there's a lot of mental illness out there. That's all I'll say. Now, are you there still? No?
Yes, I had my headset muted. It's like when people get a phone call from somebody who's harassing them. You don't have to answer the call. You can block it. But people feel compelled to answer. Like, you know what I mean? If I don't answer this or talk nice to them, they're going to put it up and I'm going to be... you know, a jerk forever. Social media. I think things have really gone too far, the way people behave and the access they have to everyone's information. They're just acting like there are no boundaries. There's nothing that people are willing to, you know what I mean, say, this isn't necessary for everyone to know about me. I love seeing my grandkids and stuff on Facebook, but I really don't like the whole world seeing them, you know?
I had a conversation with somebody after a party this one time, and she was really, really rude. And she go, oh, well, I'm just being honest. I'm just being truthful. And I say, well, being honest and being truthful isn't an excuse to ignore social graces, manners, common decency, respect, things like that. You know? What are you going to do? Throw them out the window because you're just trying to be honest? You're just turning yourself into a scumbag.
Yeah,
you are. What's the point?
I mean, Facebook and everything is cool, but I don't use Twitter and stuff. It just gets to be too much. Everybody's on their phone and obsessed. You know what I mean? I had a theory a while back that all this one-eyed symbolism with the, you know, music industry and all that. And I think the one eye that they are letting us know about is a screen. Everyone looks at screens. It's your phone, computer, your TV. That could be the one-eye symbolism because that is where most people are influenced. It's when they're watching television and what they're looking at online.
Well, I just watched Jim Carrey do the Illuminati symbol with his tongue through it, and he calls it the all-mocking tongue, and he just came out on somebody's comedy show talking about the Illuminati and how they control everything and how they get naked and go into the things. Like, he's trying to... He's doing what I would have done if you knew that the Illuminati was there, and if you were a good comedian and you had the opportunity to kind of get the message out, but you didn't want to get assassinated the next day, you know?
Right, right.
You know? Just make a few jokes about it, make it seem a little ridiculous, but also, like, put some truth in there or something and get people thinking. So, you know, I applaud him for doing it. I mean, or at least that's my interpretation of what he did. I don't know what his exact intentions were or whether or not he was just taking the piss out of all of us truthers. Who knows? But, you know.
Yeah, he's like that. So you really don't know if he's mocking them or if he's letting you in on a secret, you know?
I think that's probably the most brilliant thing to do in that case, is to make sure that everybody has no idea, like it's totally ambiguous, because the people who are up with the symbolism, they know. All right, they know the reference. And the other people in the audience, the dumb people who just wanted to literally go there to see him promote Dumb and Dumber 2, which is coming out.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like, flat. They had no idea until he, you know. I don't know. But anyway, we had a long list of like questionnaires or something like that for me, didn't we?
Yes, I listened to you on another show. I think it was Colbert or something. The guy was. He lived in Japan.
Yeah.
And I did not. I got it. I looked on TuneIn, and that's what it gave me is some stuff from 2011, 2012. But I listened to that, and that was a really good interview. And you know, you told a lot of personal stuff. But do you want to tell us how you got started? Because you said in the interview that you went to university, and then what happened after university that caused you to become a journalist? You know what I mean? But it's basically what you are. Could you not find a job for what you went to school with? Or
I found a job lickety split. I was making heaps of money. It was just kind of like I got introduced to marijuana, Bill Hicks, and conspiracy theories in the same year while I was at university. So that's kind of like a pretty formative year. Your very first experience living away from home and that kind of thing. And it was the year Fahrenheit 9/11 came out. So wow. It was kind of like my awakening year, 2004. I call it For F's Sake 04, or 04 F's Sake. And it was a really, really tough year. We were living in an incredibly cold place. We had about maybe 30 minutes of sunshine during the day. It snowed once while we were down there, and the snow was still on our front lawn 6 months later. That was pretty intense, kind of like the Occupy movement. But anyway, I was, as you do when you're in university, you sell weed to students. And so naturally, being a really dumb, naive kid, I was kind of selling to anybody who came up to my door. And one day the cops came out the door, six of them, with a dog. And so I said, "Ah, welcome, you know, here's some weed, here's the, blah, blah, blah," you know, just gave them everything. They didn't even need to search around the house whatsoever. And gave them a full confession, and then they took me to the cells, and I had my first panic attack ever. My legs gave out on me, I couldn't breathe, it was intensely traumatic. And when they dragged me to the cell, I kind of like sat there in like the lotus position sort of thing, just sort of like focusing on trying to be a stone, because it was so painful actually being in there. And then when I got let out, I went through this whole thing. Like, even though I'd done a whole full confession or anything, when they took me to court, they manufactured evidence. Even though they had a full confession, and it was just crazy. The guy in front of me, he was booked for resisting arrest, sexual assault, and growing 5 cannabis plants. Got 150 hours community service. And this was like his second or third offence or something, being second or third time being before the courts. Me, first time offender, no previous convictions, no possibility of like getting off with a warning, possibly going to jail for up to 8 years. And it turns out they didn't advise me of my rights before my right to remain silent before I signed the full confession. So they had that struck off the record. So instead of going to jail for up to 8 years, I got 300 hours community service for 13 grams of cannabis.
That's really crazy. They do that here in the States too, the drug stuff. Most people are in jail for drugs, and they really didn't, you know, pot, that you should not go to jail for X amount of years for smoking pot. It's absurd. But at least you didn't have it on your record.
Well, no, it's on my record and everything. You know, I'm a convicted drug dealer. You know, and you kind of have to carry that with you throughout the rest of your life. Can't go to the States. Can't go to Japan. Other countries, basically, you just kind of, it's luck of the draw. Do they ask you, do you have any previous convictions, or do they not? You know, and
you can't leave the country of Australia.
I'm not in Australia, okay?
Oh, New Zealand, yeah, I'm sorry.
Americans are really, really, really terrible with that, you know?
You're in New Zealand.
it's pronounced with a U, New Zealand, all right? Because New Zealanders, when we speak, we don't move our lower jaw. It's the laziest accent in the entire freaking world, which is ironic because we move so quickly, because we talk so quickly. But anyway, after getting busted and doing off my community service or anything, I went to university, and one of my brother's friends, actually, much older than me, he recommended that I do telesales, you know, telemarketing, where you call people up while they're having dinner and try to sell them stuff over the phone, and they hate you. Yeah, that was me for a good couple of years. I quit my second year of university because I wrote an essay about how bad television was and they gave me a D. And I was like, okay, this is not the learning establishment for me. I'm done with school. I'm done with indoctrinated thinking. I'm done. And so I tried to do like most truthers do, bury my head in my work, make as much money as I could. And it turned out I was trying to change the company that I was working for, you know, from the inside. I wrote a 7-page essay about what was wrong with it, what was wrong with its training programs, recruiting programs. I knew a lot about the company because I'd been promoted several times and I walked around these several floors of the building, actually getting to know all the people in the different divisions of this telecommunications company. I can't tell anybody who it was because when they fired me after writing that 7-page essay and not doing anything to improve the company as a result of it, they made me sign a contract saying that I wouldn't tell anybody which company I worked for. And gave me 6 weeks' pay to leave within 5 minutes. Pack up your desk, get the hell out of here kind of thing. After 2-3 years of service, being basically the best salesperson that they had.
Sounds like you were smarter than they were.
Yeah, it happens.
That makes them insecure.
Yeah, it happens, especially when you're dealing with sociopathic criminal scum with a inferiority complex. Who don't care about their customers, who don't really care about their employees either. And so I was actually quite happy to leave because I hadn't had a summer holiday in a number of years. And so 6 weeks' pay was basically my ticket to do that. Had a couple more jobs after that, sales jobs, and the exact same thing. This is why I developed what I call it's a made-up illness, just like all other mental illnesses that have absolutely no scientific evidence to verify their existence. No blood tests, no nothing like that. It's just an opinion. Oh, you've got schizophrenia. Oh, you've got bipolar. Oh, you've got this, that, or the other. Apparently, Al Gore has bipolar, and what I found was, I couldn't work for anybody anymore. The word for someone, being subservient, it's kind of like, I mean, I'm just actually kind of realizing it now. I realize for the first time in my life that I will never, ever take orders from my inferiors ever again. All right? Somebody's dumber than me. I want to respect people. If before I do what they tell me to do, you know, if I don't respect you, you giving me orders is kind of like a child ordering around a parent. And it's not like a superiority complex thing. It might be a little bit, but it's more about having self-respect. And I don't want to dominate any other people either. I don't want anybody to dominate me. I don't want anybody to dominate anybody. And so I had to make a choice. Will I quit my job and do all of those things that I've been thinking about for a long time, for a number of years? I'm going to go out with a camera to public meetings and protests and film them and get them up online and get into talk radio and start exposing some scumbaggery. Because at the time, I was watching like 2 documentaries a day, listening to several hours of talk radio from the US, talking about all of these issues that are going on, and it was driving me nuts. And it was driving me nuts for 2 reasons. Number 1, it was making me afraid. And number 2, it was making me frustrated because I wasn't involved in doing anything about it.
Well, I understand that a little more than I probably should. I had a hard time. I used to trade telemarketers. I had my own business and people selling door-to-door and stuff like that. You have to make appointments, you know. But I understand what you're saying, and I had a difficult time toeing the line, having people put ridiculous restrictions on you. And I don't know. I left the company. They fired me for gross misconduct because I wanted to know why you were going to make me go outside and work in, you know, the garden center. When I was a pharmacy tech, I needed to be in the pharmacy. So they fired me for gross misconduct. And that was a huge, that hit me hard, but it was also a huge moment of realizing that I'd stood up for myself. And I don't know. It was difficult to leave, but I felt like I was free. So I started working and doing things for myself. And if you are, you're doing the Guerrilla News Network.
No. That was stolen off me. I do guerrillamedia.co.nz and realguerrillamedia.com. My YouTube channel is Mr. News Guerrilla Media. My Twitter is Guerrilla Media. And then a man came along and said, hey, I really like the name, and then bought up a whole bunch of things and then started it up after having a conversation with me about what Guerrilla Media was, how it's supposed to run. And then he just kind of took it and ran with it and then said, and then told everybody it was his. That was probably one of the harshest points in my radio career. I ain't trusted nobody like that again. And in fact, what I did is I actually published the call that I had with that person on YouTube so that anybody can actually go and listen to that, and they can listen to my ideas about the business model behind it, how you have to make sure that all your contributors are completely independent from any network associations and completely independent from each other to limit infighting and to ensure that nobody at the network can control content and tell people what they can and can't say to ensure independence and also plausible deniability simultaneously, and also making revenue and all of these kinds of things. You know, there's a lot of ideas behind what makes Guerrilla Media Guerrilla Media. But I started that with a friend, I think in the first year of activism that I was doing, and that friend left me in the lurch. Can't even contact him now. Don't know why. He's it was just very, very, very freaking paranoid, right? Like,
right.
And basically bowed out, and then went to go work for highbrow technology developers and things like that, who are literally working for the New World Order, and he knows that they do, and he goes and works for them anyway because they pay him a hell of a lot of money, and he feels it's nice to be on the inside, and he was always completely hopeless the entire time. We were having a conversation with him once. We were having a curry, and he said, you know, Vinny, you're still just a slave. And I said, well, that's true. Technically, I'm still a slave. I'm a debt slave. I'm a slave to the state, just like all the rest of us are on this giant global plantation. But that's not what makes me a slave. What makes me a slave is accepting it, not resisting it. Right?
Yes, and that is hard for most people. Start and then quit.
You know, slavery is a state of mind, man.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I'm just go ahead and then tell about what happened with stupid YouTube.
Oh, right. What happened with YouTube? Well, I wrote I've over the years I've gotten to know a lot of the really, really cream of the crop, awesome people in this country. This is the thing that you'll find out when you become a talk radio show host and you get a lot of acclaim and what have you, is that people who are important, cool and fun try to mingle with you to a degree, and you try to seek them out too so that you can bring them on your radio show so that they can enlighten your audience and so that I don't have to work as hard in order to do so. And what happened was, we've got this Prime Minister, John Key, who's formerly of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, who was in charge of derivatives trading there as Merrill Lynch's representative on the board of the Foreign Exchange Committee. I mean, what a rap sheet. And there's a much bigger rap sheet behind him. And so I got these people together. Penny Bright, who's a public watchdog, Ian Parker, who's a financial industry researcher, Evelyn Gilbert, who is a blogger, she has one of the most popular blogs in the country, and who is the other person? Ben Vigen, the author of State Secrets and the host of The Postman Show, which is on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. I'm producing fellow Kiwis now into radio, just like the Americans gave me. But what happened was, we did a script. I got them all to give me bullet points, you know, this, and then the way my mind works is it's kind of like a scattergraph, so I've got about 11 different things going on in my head at any one time, And what I'm able to do sometimes is be able to sort of make dialogue, facts, and figures into a glorious puzzle, a glorious array of puzzle pieces, and actually assemble them together in a perfect fashion, so that you can really, really inject some information into people in a sequential way that gives them the full impression without any details missed out. And so I made this video called John Key's Real Past Exposed in 6 minutes. Now, this video started to get really popular really quick. Like, I've interviewed people like George Norrie and John Perkins, the economic hitman, and all these other big names and what have you. None of those videos, none of those radio shows has ever received attention like this thing did. It was actually unsurprising to me, and really satisfying. Until the seventh day, when my YouTube channel was put to rest, rather biblically. You know, I got this complaint in the morning. Oh, your video has been removed because of spam or harassment or something or other. They didn't specify why they removed the video. And then not a couple of hours later, I try to log into my YouTube channel and it's gone. All gone. 2 weeks before the election, where I'm exposing the Prime Minister bare, naked, so effective that they shut my YouTube channel down. And
that's insane.
It's actually the best thing that's ever happened to me, because, number one, it gave me street cred, all right? We went to a protest the other week, and the organizer said, Vinny had his YouTube channel removed because he did a video about our John Key's career history, and everybody cheered, you know?
That is awesome.
Yeah. So it kind of backfired something, kind of, because when I have no YouTube channel, I kind of, well, when I first learned of it, I sort of dropped to the floor. I just lay face down on the floor for like 5 to 10 minutes. Just, yeah, it was crippling, because I put a lot of work into that. It was the most subscribed news channel in New Zealand, even more than the New Zealand Herald, our equivalent of the New York Times. That has been around for 150 years. That news organization, they have like the eighth most visited website in the whole of New Zealand, and me by myself on YouTube, I outrank their channel equivalent. You know how Associated Press has a YouTube channel, that kind of thing.
Right.
It would be like somebody in America outranking them just doing alternative media.
Well. Yeah. If they had just taken down that video, you wouldn't have had as much attention at all, right?
I don't know, but it's inconsequential at the end of the day, because that video wasn't just uploaded to that YouTube channel. I uploaded it only to that YouTube channel, but a number of other people downloaded it from there and put it up on Facebook and things like that. And this one guy who doesn't even have any followers, who's just one of my listeners, posted it up on his Facebook profile, you know, like uploaded the video to it, and within, I think, maybe 72 hours, he had over 3,000 shares on that post.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the video, before it got pulled off of YouTube, had nearly 7,000 hits in under 6 days. This was like during the height of election season, so had it remained up, it would have exploded exponentially. It'd be up to like 50,000, 100,000 hits. I don't know. I have no idea what now. But at the end of the day, whatever the setback was, I came up with a whole bunch of different things to do afterwards. Like, I wanted to produce other New Zealanders into talk radio. So at the moment I'm producing Ben Vidgen, The Postman Show, and Paul Carruthers, The Independent Kiwi Show. And these are two guys who have exposed some real, real cacophonous scumbaggery in New Zealand, man. And the reason I'm doing it is because I want to create my own competition, you know. Like Lenin said, you know, if you want to control the opposition, the best idea is to lead it. So what I'm doing is I'm giving my time and my effort to produce people who I'm going to basically make into my competition. Because you can either gain 100,000 listeners for yourself, or you can help 10 people to gain 10,000 listeners apiece and still do the same damage to the New World Order, and but get 10 times the amount of work done, because I'm not the only one anymore. If you look at radio in New Zealand in terms of truth and alternative radio and things of that nature, it's me number one, and then there's a huge gap, like a gap that that is so massive that everybody else down below me in terms of rankings and in talk radio, where they're talking about truth and everything, it's pathetic, more or less. Not to belittle them. All right. In fact, I want to help them. I want to use the gifts that the Americans have given me, the training in talk radio, the producing and everything, and I want to lend that to my brethren so that they can actually do the work that I am doing without me.
You sound a lot like me, because when I worked, I would train people to do my job and hope that they would do it better than me. And you know what I mean? I wouldn't try to keep a bunch of information or power to myself so that no one else would know and they would have to come to me. You know what I mean? So that sounds really excellent in helping people like that. What protests did you go to last week?
Last week, oh, it was the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement protest, the secret trade treaty that, well, it's basically a precursor to the Regional Governance New World Order Plan. It seizes control of the economy, gives it to foreign corporations that are under control of the banking cartels, who will have basically 100% jurisdictional power over our country. And if we resist, like if we pass a law that they don't like or whatever, they take us to their World Bank-controlled world court and use our own Queen's Counsel lawyers that we pay for to help them extract money out of poor countries who can't pay up. And we lose the case, and then we start paying billions of dollars in reparations to a evil corporation for passing a law to prevent them from dumping toxic waste into our rivers, kind of thing.
Good Lord.
Yeah. And that's step one in regional governance. You need to take control of the economy, and then you can take control of governance in its entirety. The same thing happened in the European Union. They passed before the EU. There was the European Economic Community, I think, the EEC. That was a big trade deal. And then again, it did to them what the TPPA is going to do to all of us, because this is America included in this. And then, boom, then we have the Oceanic Union, right? Where nobody will have any independence or sovereignty or power over the economy, and then we're all slaves on the global plantation in a very literal sense. Right now, it's kind of figurative.
Right. And so it's already like illegal to catch rainwater, which is absurd. But it's going to be illegal to barter and trade and people, you know, haggle for stuff. What people used to do 200 years ago, you know what I mean, when they did not have money. I don't know. It's all Agenda 21 just coming to pass. It's like in one fell swoop, it seems like.
Yeah. Well, you know when you put your hands together and you interlock your fingers and you got like about 8 big fingers there and 2 big thumbs, and if you squeeze them together and you try to pull them apart, you actually kind of can't, because they're completely interlocked like that. That's how the New World Order works. They get you from all angles simultaneously, interlock the fingers, and then squeeze every little bit of juice out of you.
Well, I heard you talking about getting people not being preppers, but being more self-sufficient and independent, not relying on the government for everything. And I had an idea. You know what Angie's List is?
No.
It's a website where businesses and areas, if they do a bad job, putting your kitchen together and renovating or whatever, people give, I guess, votes or points, whatever, to people who do the best job, and people look it up and, you know what I mean, look for the people who did the best job. That would be something that people could do, even on Facebook, because here in Walla Walla, they have the Walla Walla Onion site, and people put up everything, traffic accidents, who got hit or in the hospital. They put everything up. It's like the news site for Walla Walla. People do it real time. So that could be something that a website or even a Facebook page that people could do in their local area to barter and trade if they want to. You know what I mean?
Sure. Not my area of expertise, frankly. But, yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I don't really want to barter and trade, but I may come to that for food or whatever. But tell me what you said, the New World Order. What exactly are you protesting against for the New World Order? Is it just the incident like the Trans-Pacific thing?
Well, see, because the New World Order is eclectic, you kind of need to strike at the source, at the very root of it. And I figured out about last year that the root of all the New World Order's schemes, every single thing that causes the human suffering, the enslavement and whatnot, is because of this mechanism called scumbaggery. All right, and if you manage to expose what scumbaggery is and get rid of it, or more or less, I mean, we're at a balancing point in history now where the dark side's kind of taken over, and it just needs a light side pushed back, more or less. So if you expose scumbaggery, let's think about this. Imagine if Monsanto was, say, certified scumbaggery free. How many poisonous, hazardous, non-biodegradable chemicals would they be selling to people to put in their gardens? None. How many GMOs that cause sterility and tumors in rats would they be patenting and selling to the general public? None. How many Terminator seeds that don't regrow would they be selling to poor third world farmers if there was no scumbaggery? None. And so this is the important realization here, that it's not an entity that we're dealing with that is like us. We're dealing with more or less it's psychopathy, sociopathy. I'm still unsure as to what the exact difference is. Somebody tried to tell me that there was a difference and they couldn't explain exactly what it was. So it matters not. But basically, here's the deal. If they are lying, cheating, hurtful, manipulative, dangerous, unapologetic, and murderous, it's scumbaggering, right? And there's no real forgiveness for that. There is only punishment, because they won't seek forgiveness. They won't be apologetic. They can't. They literally can't. I've tried this a number of times with people that I thought were psychopaths and caught them out on something that's absolutely terrible with the evidence, and they won't apologize for it. And I was like, yep, that's how you know. They can't do it. And they'll if they do apologize, it's not like it doesn't sound like I'm sorry. It sounds like I'm sorry you feel that way. You know? And I don't know about you, but I'm a very flawed man, and I apologize for things constantly. All right. Some people saying sorry is very difficult for them. For me, it's actually as easy as saying my own name. You know, hi, I'm Vinny Eastwood, and I'm sorry. That's how easy it is. And it seems to me that it's kind of like, because I'm a bit narcissistic, you know, I can love the sound of my own voice, a little bit of self-aggrandizement going on. Some of the same characteristics of psychopaths actually exist within me. Apart from the lack of empathy and the lack of creativity, of which I've got an absolute abundance, and what you call a benign narcissist, as Thomas Sheridan would say, along the lines of, say, Muhammad Ali or Bruce Lee, who were like, I'm the best, you know, you ain't never going to touch me, blah, 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 because they were freaking good. It wasn't because they were deluded. Whereas psychopaths, on the other hand, they kind of seem to me to be like my natural enemy, because they remind me a lot of myself and my own flaws. And ultimately, it helps to know what you're fighting against.
Right.
And some people forget that if you want to expose scumbaggery, the first place that you need to expose it is within yourself.
Well, I don't think you're a psychopath because you have empathy, which is something that psychopaths do not have. They can copy and pretend. I had Eve Lorgan on, 3 weeks ago, and I went all into the psychopath narcissistic stuff because everyone in my family was like that. When you wake up and you look up what their illnesses are, it just shocks you. It's amazing. But you're not a psychopath because you have empathy. And they can pretend, but you can tell when someone's pretending to care. There is a question from the chat or a statement. Salamo says, if you get people to live the rule of law, then you can make laws about anything. I'm not sure what the rule of law is, if that's universal law.
Well, I think common law is a pretty good one. Did you damage anything? No. Did you hurt anybody? No. Did you steal anything? No. Then why are you coming to me asking for help? That's kind of a very, very simple way of looking at it. I mean, I don't know what the law is. They say that ignorance of the law is no excuse. And my question is, why do they write a billion of them then?
Yeah, about just the most insane stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we're like, hold on a second. U.S. Congress passes the Patriot Act or something. How many pages in that bill, bro? Oh, about 7,000. Okay. And how many did you add after the alleged reading, like the night beforehand? Oh, about another 7,000 pages? Really? And did anybody read that? No.
Are you telling me
that not a single freaking person who passed the law even read it? You've got to be kidding me. And this is how they do it. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. Then why are you ignorant of them when you pass them, you scumbag? For F's sake.
They can't keep up with themselves.
this is one of these elements of scumbaggery behavior that really pisses me off. Just the brazen lying, it irks me somewhat. It makes me crazy. And that's another thing that happens in this movement with a lot of us is we get a little bit nuts because we're so angry about the injustice. And I think that this is actually probably, a good natural response to get angry, go crazy, and go and do something about it. It's not a very good idea to get angry and just go crazy, because then you've just kind of missed out the conclusion. You've missed out the realization that there is something out there that's making you angry, that there is something out there that is making you crazy. And when you feel afraid, when you feel angry, when you feel sad, it's your body telling you that you meant to be doing something about it.
Right. Well, I get upset too, but this is why I'm on the radio, because you can write letters to people. You can, go out and hold a sign or whatever. The crazier you act, I think the more they leave you alone. So by acting loud and crazy, then you can say just about anything and they're not going to be keeping tabs on you because they figure you're just some nut blowing nonsense, but you're really not. And that's the brilliance of being angry like that. Because they're going to leave you. They're not going to mess with you.
Well, they may. They may not. I mean, I think mankind's biggest mistake is the "it won't happen to me" complex. Yeah. See, I've gotten to understanding that I am a slave. I am going to die. I may be executed or whatever, but assuredly I'm going to die. And I don't internally 100% believe that resisting the New World Order is going to be successful, and I've accepted those realities. I've accepted my limitations. I can't convince people off the bat from an era of total brainwashing that took 100 years plus to instill into the public consciousness. I can't just cut through that like a knife instantly. I can't just go out on the street and go, 9/11 was an inside job, and then everybody go, Oh, really? Well, explain it to me. They don't. I got assaulted one time when I said that 9/11 was an inside job, and dude come up to me out of nowhere, just pushed me. It's crazy. And it doesn't matter how crazy you get as a truther, you're nowhere near as nuts as the member of the general public if you really get to talking to them, bro.
I haven't really done any protesting since I've moved to Washington State.
Oh, well, protesting, I actually want to talk about this because a lot of people criticize me for going out and protesting, saying that I'm not going to achieve anything. And they're wrong. You know, protesting does achieve a hell of a lot, but the thing is, people are stupid enough to believe that the protest itself will actually achieve what the protest is protesting against, all right? You go out and you protest against the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Is the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement going to suddenly stop getting negotiated, stop being signed, and they're not going to criminally, ruthlessly enslave you because they actually don't give a frack what you think? No, that's not going to happen. So it's only in that exact vein that these people say that protests are a waste of time, they don't achieve anything. Me, I figured that out really early on, that if you're going to a protest, don't go to it just to be at the protest as if it's going to achieve something. I go there for a number of reasons. Number one, get on the megaphone, lead the chants, tell a few jokes, make people happy, and give them a little bit of motivation and a little bit of information, as only Vinnie Eastwood can do. And number
encouragement
two,
also, you give encouragement when you do that.
Sure. And number two is to help those people who are the speakers, because protest isn't just people walking, holding signs. Okay, that's only one part of it. There's also a public gathering beforehand, as a big gathering with speakers, people who are activists, politicians, researchers, journalists, so on and so forth, talking about the issue that the protest is about. That is the reason I'm there, to film them, to make sure that the audio is captured correctly, to make sure it's captured with two camera angles, not one, so that when I cut it together later, it looks semi-professional, and it's a lot easier to watch and a lot more easy to listen to. Because these people have done the research. I have learned a lot at protests, and this is the reason why I still continue to go out and film them, is because of that information. And chanting doesn't really achieve anything, but information, that can change the world. And sometimes when you are one of those people who is up there speaking, you think that that's all there is, just those 1,000 people in front of you or whatever. And it doesn't occur to these people, and I'm sure a lot of them don't even know me, because I mean, I'm loud and pretty obvious, but you kind of have to research me a little before you figure out who I am and what I do.
Right.
But yeah, I make sure that they get the coverage that they deserve. And instead of only 1,000 people at the protest hearing them and them forgetting it later on, you get a couple of thousand people listening to them on YouTube instead. That's why I do it.
And people who can't go can still see it and be supportive.
And that's an achievement.
Yes, it is. We'll be back right after the break. Hello, and welcome back to the Next Level Show. I'm Aurora, and I am joined today by Vinnie Eastwood. And I've been kind of drilling him, I'm afraid. We're going to lighten things up. Salamo is on the line. Area code 418. Did you have a question for Vinnie?
Well, I did. He was talking about protests, and I'm in Quebec, Canada.
Okay, speak up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. I'm in Quebec, Canada, and now protests in Quebec. It's illegal to wear a mask, and also you have to have permission to have a protest. You have to give the route to the police and everything, and the police can deem a protest illegal at any point in time. So if we go back to the rule of law, if you can get people to believe in the concept of rule of law, and the concept of rule of law is not just about the law, it is about the lawmakers, then whenever they make a new rule, it just becomes acceptable. And that's exactly what's happened with the protest here. And that is crazy.
And I am back. I'm sorry about that. I got used to the Revolution Radio having like 7-minute ad breaks or something. There's something strange going on with this today. But anyway, I'm back. I'm sorry about that.
That's fine. Well, he was talking about, I wrote it in the text, protests in Canada. And at any time, the police can shut them down for no reason. They're just, I guess, basically not allowed. Is that right, Salamo?
Well, I could start over if you want.
Okay, go ahead and do that really quick.
Okay. And I'd just like to add that your guest so far is awesome. And myself, I lived in Australia for 2.5 years, and I still can't determine the accent. Kiwi, Australian, it's very similar.
There's one principal difference, and that's the pronunciation of the letter I and the letter E. For example, if a New Zealander asks for a pen, we ask for a pen. If a Australian asks for a pen, they ask for a pen. All right.
Oh, that's true.
Right. Whereas if I'm asking for a pin, I ask for a pin. Whereas an Australian asks for a pin, they're asking for a pen. So it's really strange.
There's subtleties that are lost sometimes. But I'll explain what I was saying. We were talking about protests. And here where I am, I'm in Quebec, Canada. And in Quebec, Canada, it's now passed that, well, it's legal to wear a mask in a protest. Because, hey, if you got nothing to hide, why should you hide yourself?
But also, hey, I got a joke about that. What do you call a Canadian movie about time travel?
What's that?
Quebec to the Future.
But also in these protests, you have to register with your local police and give them an itinerary and your route. And the police at any time have the right to deem your protest illegal.
Yeah, and I think this is something that is quite important for people to know. And I think it's just, we operate under the illusion that we have freedom of speech, that we have freedom of choice, that we have freedom in general, you know. And face facts here, you know, tomorrow they could shut everything down. You know, they got the technology, they got the capacity, they're just not doing it yet for some reason. Maybe because the public's too resistant at this point, and they need another 20 to 30 years of brainwashing and mind control and sterilance in the water and things of that nature, and destruction of the family unit and increases in poverty levels, so that basically people will be too dumb, have no family support network or any resources to resist. And that's when they might just go, "Hey, yeah, it's all over. It's all over, Rover." And
can I add something?
You go for your life.
Can I add something? That also, with all these protests that you have to have permission for, and all the protests that they allow to happen, it's about giving people that sense of importance, that sense of I am doing something, I feel important, that sense of empowerment, even though it's false.
Well, it's about hope and faith.
Is it false because it's illegal, or is it false because it's something that will never happen? It's like pipe dreams.
I think it's false because it's allowed.
Oh. Hmm.
Well, I think the one...
You've got a lot of protests... I'm sorry. You've got a lot of protests that just aren't allowed and they're quashed right away.
Well,
but
there's...
The ones that aren't are the ones that are false.
Well, I don't think so at all. In fact, what I believe is the unwritten rule of democracy is that you can say and do whatever you want so long as it doesn't actually change anything. That's it's not necessarily a false protest if you're going out and you're protesting against something real, but that protest isn't going to change anything, and so they allow you to do it, kind of thing. And then that's more or less how the law is applied. Man, these guys are being effective. Man, they're actually exposing our agenda. Man, they might actually upset the established order. Cut it off at the head. Right like that. Boom. I don't like those people protesting, wanting their freedoms. Exposing our scumbaggery. You know, you get that kind of aggression, sort of, I don't know, vile, viper, snake kind of scumbaggery going on there whenever you're talking about suppression or oppression. And I think we're, in this day and age, we're relatively unschooled as to what oppression really feels like, okay? I mean, I've talked to people who lived in Russia during the Stalinist era. It was quite funny. I was at a party one time with an old friend, and one of his mates was Russian, and we were talking about the New Zealand Labour Party. They're our equivalents of the Democrats, and at the time he was here, he was remembering what his grandmother had told him And he said that the things that were coming out of the mouths of the Labour Party at the time were things that he'd been told by his grandmother that the Stalinist government had been saying, the kind of terminology, phraseology, sort of policies that they'd been introducing step by step in order to oppress their population. And to me, what this means is that you kind of actually have to suffer to a large degree before you'll wake up to something in order to see it before it happens and prevent others from suffering, and in order to actually have that kind of motivation. Like, this is why I became a cannabis activist, because I got busted for cannabis, and I saw how bad it was for me. And I saw that out of all the people that I smoked weed with, the one who got damaged the most by that marijuana was the person who got arrested for it. You know, destroys your life.
Do you think that if everyone who went to jail and had a panic attack and that bad experience like you, you think that that were something they could do to people that would keep them from doing it again, a repeat offender?
No. It's a very individual choice thing, and it depends on a lot of different factors. Your background, who your influences are, who your mentors are. Like, I come from a very interesting family. My father is a genius and an inventor, and he had a massive forklift tire company. He had the largest distributorship in the Southern Hemisphere, designed 400 different types of forklift tire himself, and he invented the mechanism for bonding rubber to steel. He invented a specific type of tire that resolved traction issues and freezing works back in the 70s and 80s. And my mother is was a nurse, and she's kind of like an intuitive and a poet. So I've got this kind of entrepreneurial / spiritual / creative God-given gift of the gab kind of thing going for me, and because I'm used to operating sort of in that environment where the people where you came from operate at a high level, it's almost like you expect more of yourself, you know? And so when I felt depressed, when I felt like everything was over, I didn't accept it. I couldn't. It actually became almost like a challenge. Okay, I was at square 10, and now I'm back to square 1. How long is it going to take me to get back to square 10? Like, that's kind of like the first impression that you get while you're dealing with the suffering and pain and injustice, is how do you get back to where you were? And not about forgetting what happened, not about forgetting who you are, but about realizing that you are stronger than the traumas that happened to you, and you can overpower them by your sheer act of will alone. And a lot of people don't realize that they have that power. They haven't had the same influence. They haven't had the same upbringing. And so when they have the hard hand of the law passed down upon them, they don't try to think about how to get back to square 10. They consistently sit and sulk and have nothing to live for because they're still on square 1, and they have been pretty much their entire lives.
You're saying they just comply because that's their default, right?
No, I'm saying they comply because they've had a lot of things to reinforce the idea that they're powerless in their life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Television is, I think, a huge way to do that. If you watch, it's mostly cop shows on TV anymore, it seems like. And half the crap that's on there is not even real. It's not, you know, the situations that they're in, and the technology is like 40 years old. They're not doing anything original. But I think that TV teaches people to be passive and just, you know what I mean, not do it, because why? Why bother? And people give up, like you're saying.
Well, I was talking to a listener down in Queenstown, and he wanted to, like, start doing a bit of hip hop, you know, exposing the New World Order that way in his own way. And I just asked him, so how many hours a day? And everybody should ask themselves this question. How many hours a day do you spend consuming other people's content? And how many hours a day do you spend creating content of your own in order to add to that pool? Now, this isn't just TV or radio that I'm talking about. This is about the content of your life. Are you inventing something? Are you creating a business? Are you writing a blog or a book or something of that nature? Are you creating something? Okay, this is the indelible power that we have instilled in all of us, is the ability to create. Psychos don't have that ability. They have the ability to steal other people's ideas, manipulate them and distort them and to turn them into something that they're not. But they can't create something out of nothing. They can't will things into existence unless they take it from one of us. And this strikes me as basically our most important power is creativity.
And that's a lot of spiritual stuff too, because people like that, they can't create anything original. They do have to take something and twist it and make it their own.
Yeah.
That's a spiritual law too.
Now we've got a lot of these questions that we need to run through as well. I feel that we're not getting through many of them.
Well, I think we got through a lot of them.
I got one.
Okay, go.
Okay, with all this, all this.
Can you speak up?
All this false stuff that comes up through our lives. Okay, the stuff that we can realize and the stuff that we can see, and us being the truth alternative media followers and stuff like that. One of the questions that we, as a whole, don't seem to ask ourselves is, are our opinions our own? If we're stuck in a controlled brainwashing society from birth, how can we be sure that the opinions that we hold are our own? Where do we start to question, and when does that questioning become madness?
Well, there's an old philosophy called the Ballad of the Cosmic Schmuck. Cosmic meaning big, schmuck meaning idiot. And the story goes like this. How do you know if you're the cosmic schmuck? If you've never questioned, if you've never sat there one day and you just go, you know what, am I the cosmic schmuck? Then you probably are. But if you constantly question that, then you probably won't become one. And I think that's where our ideas come into it, is actually the process of the questioning. I was thinking about a listener that contacted me a couple of years ago, and he left a voicemail message to me. And he said, Vinny, he sounded really, really down. I've been working at a government department, and the whole goal of this government department is to shaft people, and I know that it is. And I used to be really upset about it, and I used to really not have any empathy. I used to have a lot of empathy for these people and what they're going through as we're trying to extract taxes out of them, and it really hurts them and destroys their life. But recently, I've stopped caring because it was hurting me too much. And he sounded really, really, you know, freaked out. He's like, Vinny, am I turning into a scumbag? And so I send him a message back and I say, well, bro, the mere fact that you're questioning whether or not you're becoming a scumbag is actually your answer. Of course you're not, because a scumbag doesn't question whether or not they're a scumbag. They just keep committing scumbaggery because it's fun. If you feel bad about it because of your actions, it means that you're very human. But it also means that you're under the influence. You know, kind of like when you get drunk and you shouldn't probably be behind the wheel of a car. If you're working for an organization that hurts people and it's actually hurting you as a person working there, it's time to find another job, son, you know, or better yet, just quit your job and start doing something on your own time, in your own life, in your own way.
Well, that is a paradigm shift for a lot of people, but when you come to the realization that you can't keep doing what you're doing, some people just give up. They don't know what else to do. Mm. And I think we lost the caller. Mm. What is the government like in New Zealand? Is it corporation-based? Because that's what America is coming to. I don't know if you watch TV, but that show Continuum on Sci-Fi, it's pretty, it's like a, they're telling us a story of what it's going to be because the corporations rule everything. Is it getting that way seriously in New Zealand? It seems to be that way here.
Yeah, well, there's an old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Okay, let me just fire a few questions at you. Have you got scumbaggery corporations that don't obey the law and then bribe politicians and then the politicians let them get away with it?
Oh, yeah.
We've got that too. Have you got fluoride in the water, despite the fact that there's a huge amount of health concerns and a whole bunch of people uprising against it, but basically everybody's getting fluoridated, whether they like it or not, using lies and BS to justify it? We've got that too. Have you got a medical system that kills more people than any other leading cause of death in your country? We've got that too. So here's the thing. There is patently no difference whatsoever. Whatever problem you've got, we've got the same problem, but it's a slightly sexier accent.
Gotcha. Well, I don't know.
We've got the thing called a sovereign parliament. So it means that no parliament can bind any future government. So if you write a law that says, I don't know, like my one is the Suppression of Scumbaggery Act, where, you know, scumbaggery would become illegal and it would actually be a very serious charge. A government could come along directly after that, be elected like the next day for all intents and purposes and go, yeah, we're just going to remove that. Oh, you got Bill of Rights? Yeah, we'll remove that too. Oh, you got these things that are restricted, like restricting the revolving door of politicians coming out of public service and then going directly into private employment for people that are affected by the exact policies that they enacted while they were in public office. Yeah, we'll get rid of that one too. All these protections, everything that has been built up over goodness knows how long to ensure people have rights, justice, fairness in an equal society, gets undermined, but they don't do it all at once. They just do it step by step by step by step until eventually you're at the top of the mountain freezing to death and nobody even knows how you got there.
Well, do you have the equivalent of Agenda 21 or is it another
name? We have
name
Agenda
or-
21 offices in the Hamilton City Council building. We went to a national organization for the reform of marijuana laws conference in Wellington, the capital, and in our hotel room, they had Planet 21 stickers on things, you know, save the environment, that kind of thing. It's actually being this big campaign. Agenda 21 is huge in New Zealand. We're implementing it really, really fast.
Well, so you have the Common Core curriculum in the schools and everything too.
Well, thing is, again, same difference, different accent. So instead of Common Core, we call it NCEA, all right? And I don't even know what the anagram mean, but basically we went from school certificate, which is where you do an exam at the end of the year, and that's like 50% of your mark or whatever, and now we've got NCEA where they basically do little projects all the way through the school year, and they get, instead of A's and B's and C's, they get achieved or achieved very well and that kind of thing. It's sort of like I had a realization about a year or two ago that I went to high school, I went to elementary school, I went to university, and if I had to add them all up, it'd probably be a total of 14 years. Okay, of indoctrination, of education. Not once has anything I've learned during those 14 years become of use to me in real life. Not once. That's how useless it is. They are adept at teaching you things that don't matter, haven't ever mattered, and will never matter. And they have the audacity to call it education.
I totally agree with you on that point. And the thing that I see in the school is there's no competition. There's no gold star system for somebody doing like extracurriculum. Everything has to be fair. Everybody has to get the same amount. You know what I mean? If you achieve something, if you do your homework and get extra credit or whatever, you should be rewarded for that, but they're not. Everything is the same, and that's going to be the way it is down the road. Everyone's going to be on the same page and have the same rules, and you're going to exercise the same, you know what I mean?
Here's how you tell whether or not the education system is working. Have Americans, New Zealanders, and everybody who has a public school system gotten smarter in general over the last 100 years or dumber?
Right.
They've gotten a lot dumber. Like, it's... I was shown a... you love this. A sixth grade exam, okay, from like 1886 or something. And the first question is, name 7 types of cloud. It's like, whoa. And they get worse, you know. it's just like, if you're sitting that exam today, this is something that like an 8 or a 9 year old would know in the late 1800s, and this is something that we know about maybe 1 to 2% of the general knowledge, and would fail so astronomically miserably that it's laughable how dumb we are today. And you know, that's another thing that I've had to come to accept, is that I'm not as smart as I think I am. I'm actually very, 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 very dumb by comparison to how intelligent our ancestors were, who have basically only really had organic food, and they all happened to be, you know, illiterate because of the Bible and so on and so forth. And there was a lot of reality, really. You had to be creative and go outside and play and have fun, and fresh water was a standard kind of thing. And it just, today we've gotten a lot more distractions from who we really are available to us, and made available specifically because if we have to force ourselves to be healthy, to be creative, to have fun with those things, then a lot of the things that we value and hold dear today that we experience on a daily basis, whether that be fast food or television or video games, we wouldn't value them anymore. All right, and I think we've been taught, coerced into valuing things that have no value, and it took a long period of time to get us into this position, and I believe it's going to take a long, long time to get us out of this position. Right? I mean, a lot of truthers go out there and they think they're going to change the world in a day, bro. You're not going to change it in a day, but the thing is, you should resist regardless of your chances of victory. You have to ensure that you are doing something every day to resist the New World Order agenda, even if it's a little way, okay?
Right.
Otherwise, they win, okay? They don't win because they win. They win because you give up.
Most people run like they're running down the street with an axe hit and ready to throw it, and, you know, they don't hit a target, so they give up. They're not willing to realize, if I take baby steps, I'm going to start taking big steps. And about the cloud thing, I can think of cirrus and cumulus. That's all. I don't think a college student could pass that test.
Well, you know, and again, a friend of mine from high school, his sister went to an American university for a year. She went from a New Zealand university to an American university. And it was like that test in Idiocracy, where he's like, if one bucket has 10 liters of water and this other bucket has 5 liters of water, how many buckets do you have? Like, man, this test is really easy. It was like that. And Americans, sorry to say this, but you've been dumbed down more than anybody else, all right?
I agree.
You've actually
even know what's going on across the ocean in another country. They have no idea what's even happening in their own neighborhood.
1 in 7 Americans cannot locate America on a map. All right.
That's sad.
That's rude.
That's just sad.
It's bad, man. Only like 1 in 8 Americans has a passport and is actually able to travel. And I was coming back on a plane from Queenstown. One of my listeners shouted me a ticket to go down there to cover his story. And I was sat next to these two Americans on the way back, and they seemed pretty clued on. You know, we had a good conversation and that kind of thing, and they understand that the government's full of scum and that kind of thing. And so when we parted ways, I said to them, "See you later, guys. Enjoy what's left of your country." And they laughed their asses off.
Oh my gosh.
we know it's inherently true, don't we?
Yes.
Yeah. And see, when you're coming across this, and because America's so isolated in this sense from the international community, Americans are hated worldwide. Let me.
I know that people don't get that. They do not understand that.
Yeah. In the royal "we" sense of the word, like "we" meaning the world culture in general, we hate Americans. Okay, and this is something that I've really struggled with, because I used to be anti-American, sort of like socialist leanings or whatever, before I woke up to the truth. And this is kind of like this divide and conquer mechanism on steroids. Here you have a country that was the first to create a republic, to throw off the largest military dominating colonial power in the history of the world, that had the fastest performing economy with a 10% growth per year, and no taxation, the highest education, the best healthcare, the best of absolutely everything. And I see it corrupted, and I see it destroyed, not from without, but from within.
Right.
And the horrible realization was that the exact same thing is happening to my country, but they're just not as far down the track as yet. But we still have all the exact same problems nonetheless. And what this realization taught me is that I'd never actually really hated Americans, and I don't think anybody actually really does. What we've all hated is what the government does, what the right. corporations do, what the scumbaggery elements within your nation do. And once you realize that, once you realize that we've all got the same problems and the same oppressor, that makes us brothers and sisters together in the fight against these frickin' filth. And it seems to me that because we're on the other side of the world from each other, it doesn't mean that we can't lend a helping hand, because there have been many times in my life where I've been down on my luck or really harsh or something, and somebody who I don't even know, who might live miles away from me or whatever, will offer me a word of encouragement or give me some wisdom. But ultimately what they did is they made me realize that I wasn't alone in all of this. So I just want to tell all the Americans, regardless of how bad things are, you're not alone in this. There's people like me in every country of the globe who knows what's happening to your nation, who doesn't like it, and who wants to help, who wants to lend a helping hand from 10,000 miles away. And that is an encouraging thought.
Well, I will tell you something that I've said before. I get rocks thrown at me all the time, but if you watch 20 years ago the G.I. Joe cartoon, basically that's what America is G.I. Joe World Police. They told us exactly what we were going to do, what our role was going to be, and the requirements in the cartoons. They've told us everything in your face. Even if it's a child's story, they're telling us exactly what their plan and their agenda is. And people don't realize that. I get in trouble because I say the Constitution is dead. It expired in 2005. With Patriot Act and Homeland Security and NDAA, that replaced the Constitution. The Constitution doesn't exist after those documents. But they let it stay in place, I believe, because they're not ready for, I guess, the mass panic, or to, they're slowly bringing things in and changing things, but they're letting things stay the status quo, and I don't understand all the reasons, but they know what they're doing, and we have no clue what they're doing. Most people don't. They don't even think anything's going to happen, because everything has been the same for them their whole life. But they don't know what it's like to go through a hunger spell, or, you know what I mean? Or after the World War, or have your country be at war. And Europeans do know about that, because they had it right on their front step. They had, you know what I mean, Nazis and whatever. So Americans are very isolated, and they're very, I don't even remember the word, they're just tunnel vision. They don't have no peripheral vision, you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's, again, the exact same thing that's happening, because I'll go around and I'll talk to New Zealanders about various issues, and invariably I get the same ignorant, stupid responses that you'd get from anybody in any country in the world, that kind of thing. It's a global dumbing down, and it can be frustrating sometimes, but, you know, you can't give up and you can't stop doing what you're doing because you have a moral obligation to do something about it, right? If you see your friends, your family, your country slipping into darkness and you choose to stop fighting for it, so because you want to, I don't know, you want to make some money for yourself, or you want to have a bit of power for yourself or something like that. I mean, I once toyed with the idea of getting wealthy and having power and influence and things of that nature. And then it slowly dawned on me that I would actually have to stop doing the right thing in order to obtain those, because I haven't seen too many people, if any, make ridiculous fortunes and obtain immense amounts of power and influence by doing the right thing. I've only seen people who do evil things for the wrong reasons, who commit fraud, who gain those kind of trinkets. And it seems to me what the media and various other influencers are trying to get us to do is to not wake up to that fact that you're not going to be rich, you're not going to be powerful, you're not going to be influential, because that high watermark has been captured, right? It's been captured by the so-called 1% and the Rockefellers and Rothschild banking dynasties. They have taken all of the goodness out of competition. Okay, when you're competing against somebody, you're both honestly competing. Okay, you're not trying to steal each other's ideas. You're actually trying to literally come up with a better idea than the other guy on your own. Whereas the modern form of competition involves sabotage, spying, and lying, basically, in order to one-up each other. It's not an honest form of competition anymore. So whatever good ideals behind privatization and capitalism and libertarianism were there, they were philosophies that were built on the predication that criminals don't run all the wealth and power centers of the world already.
Okay, I totally understand what you're saying, and doesn't it seem really ridiculous that the bad guys, the real psychopaths, the ones who do the most damage to people, whether it be their family or whatever, they seem to live forever? It's like, why are the bad guys, why can't they be the ones who die young, you know what I mean?
Well, I've got a great quote that I came up with. You know why bad guys don't get assassinated?
Why?
Because only good guys would want to assassinate them, and good guys don't assassinate people.
Gotcha. Like goes with like. Alright, there's a question.
We can't become like them. It's sort of like if somebody offers you something, and this has actually happened to me quite a few times, where somebody will say, Vinny, I'm going to give you $1 million, or I'm going to give you this or that, I'm going to make you famous, I'm going to make you powerful and big or anything, I instantly withdraw from those people and go, whoa, I don't want what you're selling, okay? I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it for the right reasons. I'm not going to accept your influence. If you're going to promise me something, if you're going to promise me wealth, if you're going to promise me power, give it to me without thought of return. Okay? Give it to me. Donate it to me. If you want control over me, if you want to influence me, I'm not interested. If you want to help me, I am interested.
That's right. It don't make it have a and hanging on at the end where you have to meet a requirement or something. Well, there's a question from the chat. Why do you Vinny, why do you think they plan this crap out to control, or do you think this crap is a beast that has grown out of control?
I don't really understand the question.
Do you think they planned this crap?
Well, of course they did. They admitted they did.
for a long time, there are hundreds of years.
I mean, back to the 1776 Adam Weishaupt document in the formation of the Bavarian Illuminati, where people attended that meeting and came back to their home country saying that a conspiracy was so grand and so vast and so devious that neither the church nor the state nor the people could ever escape it. And anybody who talks about the conspiracy above their breath would be seen as crazy.
Right. Well, shoot. The way that it's set up, there really is no, there's no way out of the whole system. But do you have a religious or spiritual view regarding all of this?
Well, I saw a great Facebook post that says some people don't eat bacon because of religion. I don't do religion because of bacon. And that's more or less my religious philosophy. I don't actually read the Bible or the Quran, but I've talked with many people who are devoutly religious and faithful people who I believe are good people, who I believe haven't actually succumbed to the mindless indoctrination like other people do. A lot of the tenets and principles by which I live my life are actually taken from a number of different religions. For example, I believe in the Muslim ideal of no usury, you know,
no
loaning money out at interest. And you may not know this, but usury and private banking and loans are actually banned in a lot of Muslim countries. I agree with the Christian tenets of the Ten Commandments. You know, don't steal, don't kill. It's basically common law, more or less.
It's common sense also. It's like, how could that not be included in it for a society?
Yeah, like, oh, somebody had to spell it out for you, you know?
Yeah.
And I think when it comes down to it, I am my own spiritual being. I have my own connection to the source. And it's kind of like Nikola Tesla said, I know that there's a source, and I know that it is the source of my ideas and inspiration, but I'm not smart enough to know what that source is or what it's thinking.
Right. Well, I see that over the last couple of years, a whole lot of things like hidden knowledge, occult stuff has been brought out. And it's mainstream. You can read everything about the Freemasons. They're basically done complete disclosure, and so many other things that we did not have access to. And I see that people are going, "Yay, we beat them! We figured them out! We got their information! You know, we're gonna win!" Blah blah blah. I don't think so, because that's why I named my show The Next Level. I believe they have gone on to something bigger and better that we will not know about for a long time. And it is diabolical. It is not have our best interests, you know, in mind. But I don't think that we have really, you look at Bibliotheca Pleiades, that website, there's so much information there, and most of it is old. It's old stuff, Wayback Machine stuff. It's good, relevant information, but it's not relevant to us right now. It's what already happened and what they did that got us to this point. Does that make sense?
Sure. But on the other element of religion, I've saw a very interesting story one time about the survival rates of United States POWs in Vietnam. And the survival rates for those who were devout Christians and strong believers was far, far, and so significantly higher than those who were atheists. Because if you don't believe in a higher power, if you don't believe in some kind of greater entity or something bigger than yourself, when you're locked away in that cell with no hope of rescue, you're by yourself. with no hope of rescue. If you have faith, you're never by yourself, and you're never without hope. And so the body doesn't shut down as if it knows it's going to die, and you survive. And what this taught me is that it isn't the belief in religion that gives people that power, that survival, that ability. It's merely faith in general. Faith in something bigger than yourself. Faith that you are part of a whole. And my general concept of God is that God is a macro organism, and each organism is part of its own subset of chains. There's a guy called, I forget his name actually. But anyway, in 1913, he invented a granite crystal microscope that got 60,000 times magnification. Okay? Normal electrostatic microscopes that we're using today get about 10,000 times magnification. This technology got suppressed because of what he discovered. He looked inside a normal human cell and found out that it was made up of all of these independent cells, all of these different organisms in between them. And then he looked into one of those, and he found out that it was made up of all of these different cells, all acting independently. And he looked into one of those, and it was the same again. And then he looked into one of those, and it was the same again. And he looked into one of And what the realization that he came to, and the reason why his technology was suppressed, is because life is built upon life upon life upon life in an infinite scale, up and down. The fractal universe theory, more or less. I'm starting to believe this to be true. And what a God is the next step up the scale for you. For example, to the 5 trillion cells in my body, I'm God. Okay? To me, I'm one of the 5 trillion cells, you know, give or take, on planet Earth, and Earth's God. Okay? And God's part of five trillion planets and suns and so on, or whatever, as part of the galaxy. And the galaxy's God to Earth. And the galaxy is part of a million so on so forth clusters in a red dwarf star cluster or whatever. And that's God to that. And it seems to me that if you've got that kind of realization that you are actually part of a whole, that not only are you a god to the organisms beneath you, but you have gods above you as well. And I think that what people interpret as the will of God is all of those little psychic screams and psionic emanations that come out of all living things. And they... It's kind of like how Star Wars said, it's they interpret the will of the Force by listening to the midichlorians, these little microscopic DNA things. And I think the Earth listens to us as we're living on it and responds and does some really strange and amazing things as a result. And there's so many things that are unexplainable by science, things that should happen that didn't, and vice versa. Stories of churches that were commanded to be bombed, where it didn't matter how many times they tried to bomb it, the bombs wouldn't actually drop out of the aircraft. Like, every single time they tried to bomb it, there would be a malfunction. You know, like an against astronomical odds. And I think what this means is that we're all playing a part here in the broader sense of the entire universe, and that each of our bodies is the home to trillions of microscopic civilizations. And so we have an inherent responsibility to play that part as good as we can. As long as we have subjective realization, we can realize who we are, we can realize what we're doing, and we can create things, and we can do whatever we want, more or less. And it's kind of like you're wiping out civilizations if you don't live up to your potential.
Right. Do you believe that psychopaths, are they're born that way? Because I do.
Well, some of them are, I reckon, but some people can be infected. There's a... who was I? I had a couple of psychopath roundtables. If you go to my YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, ladies and gentlemen, and you search the term psychopath, I had a associate producer for a week who organized 3 panels with different people talking about the psychopath phenomenon. Some of them talking about it as archons, some of them talking about it as psychopaths, and some of them talking about it as Watiko or Jin. And they all seem to have the exact same influences, and they all agreed across these three different eclectic fields of research and panelists with years and years of experience studying in their field, all of them were in absolutely agreement on one thing, that they can infect you, that they can turn you into one of them if they have enough influence over you, if you have enough fear, if you have enough doubt, if you have as little faith in yourself, they can, almost like it's a an organism, like a cell, dividing, traveling through the air, then attaching itself to the back of your brain stem, and then taking it over, shutting off the frontal lobes, empowering the reptilian brain at the bottom of the cortex, and then
that's basically a walk-in.
Yeah. So, you know, they're born and they can be influenced. You can be born a normal person and then have a psychopath come into your life, rape you, kill you, or try to kill you, or something like that. And then because of the amount of fear it generates, you actually become a food source for these parasites.
Right, and because it's like Stockholm Syndrome. You love your abuser so much that you become like him to survive, right?
I'm not 100% sure if that's exactly it, but you know, close enough. But if you put a psychopath on an island, desert island, give him all the food, shelter, and water he needs to survive, but nobody around to abuse, they'll die.
That's a good point. They would not thrive at all.
Yeah, they need us, and they've needed us for thousands of years. These entities have been around for all this time, since the beginning of civilization. I don't think they're going anywhere fast. And we're going to have to deal with them, conceivably, till the end of time.
Yeah, I would really hate to be stuck in a FEMA camp or something with them. That would be a truly awful experience. I wanted to ask you about that video that you put up about why men die violent deaths and women live longer. Was that by Sam Shea, is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Dr. Sam Shea was a great guy, yeah.
A lot of what he talked about was basically what you're talking about, psychopaths. They, you know what I mean? I don't know. They do everything across the spectrum. And what you were talking about earlier, what you believe, I believe the power of belief is like the most powerful thing in the world. And if you believe that you're going to survive, if you believe, you know what I mean, if you believe that you can make it, then you can. Some people don't or can't relate that way, but I do believe that is true. If you, what you believe in, what doesn't matter what you believe in, like I said in that movie, Serenity, just believe. It doesn't matter what you believe in, just believe. And they tell us this stuff. Basically, they reveal what I would call their religion or cult. They tell us this stuff and expose it. But most people don't see it for what it is what I think. But I see that on your YouTube, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, I see the Sam Shea thing. That was a really good interview. It totally, totally explained everything about me and my family. My father was a psychopath and very abusive, and it explained why my mom and I have so many physical issues, you know, fibromyalgia and diabetes and other stuff, immune systems. That explained and made sense of so much stuff, and I really am, really, really am impressed with everything that you're doing, because you're just going out full out and doing all this stuff. It's the way I see it is it's information. If you don't like it, leave it alone. If you know if it's something you can use, then pick it up, but keep going, because it's just information. That's the only way I know to put it anymore to people.
Yeah, well, I met Dr. Sam Shea at a New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine conference, and his presentation on the 10-point wellness plan floored me. Like, I'd been interviewing health professionals for like 6 or 7 years, and then Dr. Sam Shea comes along, and I'm like, whoa! He's like 10 times as amazing as any health presenter that I've ever seen. Not to belittle anybody, but this guy's got so much information, and he comes from such eclectic knowledge base, as he's a functional neurologist, and he's a He's got a number of different qualifications. He comes from the medical royalty of Philadelphia. His grandfather was the top cardiologist in Philadelphia. You know, really famous man. And what Dr. Sam's great regret is, and the reason why he's motivated to do some of the work and indeed the presentations that he does, is because had he known what he knows now, his grandfather would still be alive today, you know, and so many other people would be as well. We're slowly killing ourselves because we go, oh, we need to have this particular form of exercise and we need it 30 minutes a day. And then Dr. Sam Shea goes, well, actually, the only reason why people think that you need 30 minutes of exercise a day is because back in the day when they were first developing this scheme, they had a thing called VO2 max, which measured the oxygen into your lungs while you're exercising. And the reason why they decided to do it half an hour and things of that nature is because the university students that were studying the oxygen and the exercise regimes had classes to go to with set period lengths, and they could only do half an hour of research at a time. And so they recommended everybody do half an hour of exercise a day. Whereas Dr. Sam's discovered that it's actually a lot more beneficial to your body if you do sprint training. If you run as hard as you can, but only 60 seconds, you will get really, really huge injections of human growth hormone and a number of other really healthy things, and your body will start to become stronger and healthier right away. Whereas if you're doing constant exercise like marathon running or something of that nature, you're releasing huge quantities of cortisol, which is the opposite of human growth hormone that literally eats away your muscle. Why do you think all the marathon runners look ridiculously skinny like they're freaking cancer patients? It's because they've been running the whole entire time, flooding their body with hormones that eat muscle tissue. Okay? The body doesn't have a choice. It prioritizes your survival. And that's why this dude who... you remember there was some guy who wrote a book about jogging and how great it was or whatever, and then one day
distance jogging and basically killing yourself.
Yeah, and then he died of a heart attack while out jogging. You know? And that's the kind of thing. And that's just one of a thousand things that Dr. Sam Shea says that are like, whoa!
Totally. I just had to get him in here.
Yeah, I will give you his contact details because, in my opinion, he's probably one of the most important medical minds of our time. And he's here in New Zealand and he's doing conferences and things of that nature. But I've actually kind of made it my personal mission to help Dr. Sam Shea get up there on the world stage because I believe he can save lives.
Yep, I was so impressed with him. I put the 10-point wellness cell on a seminar in the chat room, the link for that. But this is the end of the show. I want to thank you very much, Vinny, for being here. This is Revolution Radio, and I will see you next week with the Next Level Show.